House Committee on Emergency Preparedness and Ocean Policy to order. And today we have, thank you very much for coming to Oregon's Water Resource Department. We have a discussion with Director Ward and Brenda Bateman on water conservation, supply initiative, and other updates. And we're really happy you could come. I wish that the rest of our Coastal Caucus could hear this because they'll be interested. I'll tell them all to tune in later. So,
thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome. Members. Appreciate that warm welcome. For the record, my name is Phil Ward with the Water Resources Department, and with me today is Brenda Bateman, who's our new Senior Policy Coordinator, and we'll be doing our legislative coordination in the years ahead. So we wanted y'all to get a chance to look at her and quiz her a little bit, put her on the spot today.
Okay.
We wanted to chat with you a little bit about a modest proposal we brought forward to the last legislature, which you all chose to fund. And let's go ahead and put that screen up, if we might.
Do we need to lower
the
lights?
There it is.
Would you like the lights?
Do you want the lights lowered? Is that easier for you?
There we go.
Oh, there you go. Thank you, Martha.
Oh, you're good.
You just kind of went.
It just always amazes me when we push a button and it actually comes up.
So this proposal was something that we called and continue to call today the Oregon Water Supply and Conservation Initiative. And this was a budget package in the agency's budget last legislative session. Let's go ahead to the next slide. Maybe if we get into the show, we'll quit getting those good messages.
Stay on it.
So here's the issue, representatives. This is a picture of the state of Oregon, and the brown is where we're not giving out any water rights anymore in the state.
Wow.
So you can see just a couple small areas, largely the blue area in the Willamette and one little spot on the coast. Amazingly, even on the coast, we are not providing surface water rights in the state of Oregon because the water has been fully appropriated. Go ahead, Brenda.
Can I ask you a question on that right now?
Yes.
I remember it had to be in 1991 because I was working with Representative Jim Witte from Coos Bay that year. And I remember something coming through our mail that I happened to look at, and it was several pages, and it was just listed all the rivers from the top to the bottom of the state, and it was ODF&W requesting water rights. And what happened? Is that why that is? Did they get them all? Or
Let's go ahead and back up real quick.
I don't want to disrupt your flow here, but
yes. Well, that's part of the reason that there's no water available for appropriation, because in the late 80s, early 90s, the In-Stream Water Right Act passed in 1987, and ODF&W did indeed apply for in-stream water rights for a number of the water bodies in the state, and as a result of some of those rights, when they were issued, it locked up the rest of the water.
Okay.
So that is indeed one of the reasons.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Ward. I'm a dummy on this. So can you tell, when you talk about the water, what do you mean by the water?
Excellent question, Madam Chair, Representative. So what I mean by the water, the waters of the state, all above and below ground, are by statute owned by the state of Oregon. And then rights to use or appropriate that water are granted by the state through your Water Resources Department. And this map refers only to surface water, representatives. So this would be the places in the state where you can no longer come to us and get a new water right to use water out of a surface water body. So a river in eastern Oregon, you can see a bunch of them. Those are nearly all locked up today. We no longer give out surface water rights. Now the next slide is going to show us groundwater. Did that answer your question, Representative?
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, but I guess my question is, who determined that that was all we got?
Again, an excellent question, Madam Chair, Representative. That basically is done when you take when you add up the water rights that have been granted for a surface water body, and our agency does that, and when they fully appropriate the stream, then we don't give out any more. By fully appropriate, I mean utilize all the water that's available to be used. Now, Representative, the Chair's question related to what we call in-stream water rights. So most streams in the state have some kind of in-stream water right that's been put in place, just like a regular water right, but that right is dedicated to be in stream, not to be taken out and used for irrigation or something of that nature. So when you take all those rights together, the in-stream and the out-of-stream rights, and when that equals the water in that water body, then we don't grant any more rights. So that's the situation we're in a lot of the state.
Phil's
over here. Absolutely.
Also for not just irrigation, but beneficial use for municipalities, fish, all kinds of things. So I just didn't want to brush right over that because it's pretty important.
So a quick follow-up. Okay. The reason this concerns me is because Eastern Oregon, has a great need for water for to help us with this fuel, this biofuel problem. And so you're just saying, forget it. That corn's got to either live in an arid desert or we're not letting you have any, even though it's a good thing.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's exactly true. And I see Representative Schaffler smiling at me. And he knows this issue well. And we have situations right now, Representative, if you see that little orange spot there up in the Columbia Basin in the Hermiston area there, that's an area where we have actually seen groundwater declines of up to 500 feet in some wells. And so we're not granting, not only are we not granting new surface water rights up there, we're not granting new groundwater rights either. And those are some of the areas, some of the most productive lands in our state when you add water to them. So yes, ma'am, there are places that could use water in many parts of the state that we no longer provide water rights for.
Well, there's plenty of water up there. You just got to be able to pull it out of the river.
You know what, Brenda? It's probably because it's trying to put you automatically on the wireless. And I was wondering if, I don't know what would happen if you said yes, but I don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah.
Next time.
You might just do that swing up.
One question on that last slide. The little spot, the little orange spot in Eastern Oregon, what area is that?
Let's go back to that slide.
If you can.
Tiny dot.
Yeah, that little tiny dot there in Eastern Oregon.
In the far east, right over here?
That one.
That, I cannot even read that, and I don't recall. It's
well, if you can't on that one, I sure can't on this little tiny one. I wondered if it was the Oahe Reservoir.
It is not the Oahe Reservoir.
Okay, thank you.
But it is a groundwater limited area in that area.
That, so well, I guess I should say in that valley. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's groundwater. And I moved too quickly from these slides. These orange spots are what we call critical groundwater areas. Mm-hmm. They're areas where the groundwater situation has become so severe that not only do we not grant additional water rights, but we actually, in this area particularly, have ratcheted back what people are allowed to use in terms of groundwater under their existing right. So in this area, in these areas here, some of these folks are getting less than 15% of what their water right permit allows them to get, because we're trying to stem the tide of decline. As you can imagine, it's caused significant hardship on some of those operations.
Well, that was my reason for the question, because that's an agriculture area over in that general area as well, although closer to the border, I think. So I was just, that was my curiosity.
So this is an area in that part of the state where we have those same issues. Mm-hmm. These areas here are what we call groundwater limited areas, and while we are not allowing new groundwater rights Here, we're not ratcheting rights back either. So if you have an existing right, you're solid. But that is the challenge because, Representative, as we talked just a moment ago, we've moved then because the surface water is fully appropriated, as we just discussed, then we've moved to groundwater. And in these areas where you see these colors, now we're restricting groundwater as well. So you wouldn't think in Oregon we have these kind of situations. But even here in this state, we do have significant areas where we have challenges meeting our current water supply.
Very briefly, Madam Chair, thank you. Last year we had the Oasis Project. It didn't pass, but it got a great conversation going. And we have areas where we have plenty of water. It's just a question of when you take it out of the stream and where you store it and how you store it. And there are ways to replenish these aquifers. We know how to do it. It's just having the political will and spending a little bit of money now so we can get incredible, you can't even calculate the benefits in the future. It's all a question of pulling it out in high flow times, getting it into those aquifers in a clean, environmentally sustainable way and getting it back out. That's the key to this, and we have the answer. We just need to get enough people in this building to understand that. And when we talk about getting money for services, we can do all this, and we won't have to raise anybody's taxes. It'll be a boon for this state.
Absolutely.
I'm not trying to suck up to the good Chair Boone, but it will be a boon to this state.
Say, wow.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Rep. Callan.
We're going to
make them shut up in a minute.
No, I will get you moving on. This is not a political announcement or discussion.
It was mine, Madam Chair. Just a matter of fact.
My request in follow-up is because I cannot read the areas on there and
or
certainly can't in the handout. If you could get me a listing that corresponds to those areas, I would really like to know what those little words say. So
I would
if you
too.
Could get that to us later, that would be helpful for my information. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative, we'd be happy to do that for the entire committee.
I think we're all in that position except for Rep. Schaffler seems to have perfect vision. So,
well, if he can read me all those little words, then I
that's okay.
Can
okay.
do that.
We'll let you get on with
a good water resources director would have those all memorized and be able to iterate them. Let's go on to the
okay.
next one. So we began to begin asking ourselves several years ago, how many states in the West have a long-term water supply strategy? Because we did not. And so I had a member of my staff do a survey of the 18 western states that all have similar water law to Oregon's and asked that question. There were two states in the West that did not have a long-term articulated water supply strategy at the state level. Those were Oregon and Alaska. And so the message to me at that time was, we need to get in gear and do that. So our first attempt to make this happen is the initiative that we're talking about today. So we're attempting to build a water supply strategy that identifies current and future demand and matches that up with current and future water availability. The gap, obviously, is what we need to identify, and then we need to identify the methods in this state by which we're going to fill that gap in the years ahead. And you can see some of the actual programs, and Representative Schaffler mentioned a couple of these in his remarks a moment ago. Go ahead. Okay, so this is the animated part of the slide. Brenna, why don't you just move us on through this? And I think, okay, let's back up. I'm sorry. I think this, so meeting the current and future demand, the things highlighted there in yellow below are the things in our initiative that we're looking at in terms of meeting Oregon's future demand. Aquifer storage and recovery, something the representative just mentioned. Aquifer recharge, which is another version of that tool. Above ground storage. There are places in Oregon where we can store water above ground yet today, we believe, in an environmentally friendly manner. Community and regional planning is a piece of the equation. Conservation and reuse of water, equally important pieces of this equation. So we are attempting to build a long-term water supply strategy through this initiative. There are five components of this initiative today, four of which were funded by the 07 legislature. The first is a detailed assessment of existing and future water demands. So what's our need today in Oregon, our unmet need, and what will that need look like in the years ahead? That's currently underway through an engineering firm called HDR. They're currently doing that piece of the initiative. The second is an inventory of potential conservation opportunities. Where can we gain new supply through conservation? Again, HDR is doing that piece of the project, and that's currently underway. An inventory of potential storage sites above and below ground. Our agency is doing this internally, and that's currently underway. Then the fourth piece that was funded this last time around is match funding for community and regional water supply planning. Representative Boone, hopefully we're going to have a grant in from some folks in your neighborhood soon, so we can get a regional look up on the North Coast underway, as you know and have been very helpful with. The fifth component of the initiative, the basin yield estimate, that's simply estimating around the state how much water each basin yields, so we know how much water we're working with. That was not funded. We hope to be back in 09 with a funding request to complete that piece of the project. So with your permission, Madam Chair, I'm going to turn the next part over to Ms. Bateman.
Yeah. Thank you. And just for the record, if you'd ID yourself.
Again. Good morning, Madam Chair, representatives. For the record, my name is Brenda Bateman. I'm the Senior Policy Coordinator for the Oregon Water Resources Department. And I'd like to share some more details about the initiative with you this morning. At its heart, the initiative is a data collection exercise. And I'd like to review the first component of the initiative, which Director Ward has already mentioned to you. This is an assessment of existing and future water supply demands. This component of the initiative will be led for us by HDR Engineering, our private contractor that we've selected. They'll be looking at water demands currently and then projecting out to the years 2025 and 2050 as part of this component. And they'll be collecting data, mostly data that already exists, from across all water use sectors. So they'll be surveying municipalities, ag, self-supplied industries, hydropower in stream, and aggregating all of these demand assessments so that the end user at the very end of the process can pull up a map on the internet off of our department website and click onto a county or a basin at about that level and see what all of these users within that region have identified as their water needs currently and moving into the future. They're also going to be helping us identify where the data gaps are, because obviously as part of this very modest process, we're going to have some significant data gaps that we'll need to address in the future. And they're also going to help us with some scenarios so that as you pull up a county or a basin on your screen, you could run through some what-if scenarios and say, all right, well, what if this entire region were to engage in 3% conservation process over the next several years? Or what if climate change were to be so, give us seasons that are so hot that we were to increase our demand for water by X percent over the next several years? And so you'd be able to plug in a couple of factors and play with the scenarios a little bit and change what the demand piece of the calculation looks like so that we'll know what our range of possibilities looks like over the next several years. I think this will be a very helpful tool for not only county planners, but other folks that are planning for long-term water supply in their area. The second component of the initiative is called our Inventory of Conservation Opportunities. And again, HDR will be going out to the water users and asking them for ideas that they've already had. We don't want folks to be doing any new work as part of this initiative. And they'll ask, what are the potential conservation projects that you've already thought of but have not moved forward with because of institutional barriers or financial barriers or some other type of obstacle? Let us know what kind of of thinking you've been engaged in out there, and that way we can identify the potential for conservation projects in the future and perhaps help with funding or other types of mechanisms as we move forward with that project. So some of the examples that we listed here, these are just a few of the many types of examples, would be projects regarding water reuse, implementing leak detection and monitoring and repair programs, installing meters or other measurement devices, implementing conservation rate structures, that is pricing structures that help with conservation, and conversion of processes and equipment to more water efficient. More water-efficient opportunities. So these are the kinds of things that they'll collect, and again, these will be made available on an aggregated county or basin level for folks to access. The third component of the inventory is work that our staff will be doing inside the department. And so this will no longer be under the purview of the private contractor. These are water resources folks. And this is an inventory of potential storage sites around the state. Again, we're looking for information that will help us identify and then prioritize our work in the future. And when we talk about storage sites, we're talking about both above ground and below ground sites. Below ground meaning aquifer storage and recovery. That should be aquifer storage and recovery, or artificial recharge are the two types of below ground projects that we're talking about. This work is also underway and is in the data collection stage.
Brenda, I have a quick question before you get too far along. On your one of the where is it? It's the where do the conservation opportunities exist? The part about installing meters. Remember, we had a couple of bills last time, and there was some opposition to that because of the potential cost and all that. So is that something that you're looking at just as part of this assessment where someone will, with a landowner's permission, install a meter for their use? And do it statistically, that kind of thing?
Madam Chair, without making any type of determination as to whether it's feasible or anything like that, this particular piece of the inventory will be to document the types of programs the water users themselves have been considering and would like to see in place but have run up against some sort of financial or other obstacle. So when we put this bullet together, we were actually thinking more along the lines, in this case, of municipalities that are looking to fully meter their own water users, their own systems. And some folks are, many folks are very far along, but some still have some work to do. So that's what we were thinking with this one.
Yeah, briefly. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, the financial obstacle is an obstacle, but there are other obstacles, too. I think there's an underlying current of distrust of what this data is going to be used for. I mean, if it's used for positive economic, environmental, and social needs and benefits, great. But if it's used to shut people down, and there's a real fear out there, if it's used for that, and there's even a history of this, then you got people that rightfully get very weary of this kind of concept. So I wrote that down before the good chair asked the question. I was going to comment at the end, but I thought it'd be a good time to inject this into the conversation. So,
Madam Chair, Representative, we agree.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So,
I guess because I live in a community that has meters, I'm amazed that we don't have them. So is there a reason?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think certainly different areas are in different, are most municipalities meter and meter effectively. There are some parts of the state where that's not the case. And so it's important, we think, to identify where the opportunities to gain efficiency through adding that to the equation is. But most municipalities do meter and meter effectively.
I think we're talking about not in cities, out in rural areas, where they don't, not in town, like if you have your own water system, for example.
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So
So just a brief comment about the possibility for surface water storage sites. We talked about this inventory currently underway within our department, and what our folks are doing are collecting all of the, again, available information that is out there about potential surface water storage sites, and there's quite a bit of information. I just came from a briefing this morning where our folks were talking about the database that they've compiled thus far that has more than 11,000 data points. No, it must be 1,100 data points on a map with surface water sites that have been considered and are in varying stages of development. That is, some of them have some operations on site but would like to expand, or some don't yet exist at all. But what we'd like to do as the end result for this project is to put all of those data points up on a map so that, again, someone from their home computer can click on a map and bring up all the data that we have about a particular storage site. So this would include the contour maps that are available, any site characteristics, any watershed characteristics that we know, any photos that we may have on site, and any project history if it exists. These are going to be very important, just like the previous components that we've talked about, when it comes to identifying and prioritizing our work for the future. The below ground storage sites, similarly, this is just a schematic that shows one example of what might look like, are being managed in-house by our staff, and they will also result in an online interactive map. But the information that will be tied to each one of these points will focus more heavily on the geological and hydrological characteristics of each potential project site, more than anything else. I did want to note here at this point, just for your information, that the department and OSU are co-sponsoring an all-day workshop on February 28th that you might find interesting, and they're still taking registrations for, that's specifically focused on aquifer storage and recovery and aquifer recharge. This very topic here, they're going to be delving into all the technical details throughout the day and have first-rate speakers who are really leaders in the field on this. That will be held in Corvallis all day on February 28th, and you can go to the OSU website, the Institute for Water and Watersheds, if you'd like more information or if you'd like to participate.
Okay.
Madam Chair, on that right there, will you be giving out a summary of those conversations after it's over? In case we can't make it, I'd like to see that.
Madam Chair, Representative, we can certainly provide you a copy of the proceedings, indeed for the entire committee, if you're interested in that.
Great. Yeah.
My favorite story, Madam Chair, relative to this type of work is the city of Pendleton, a city in whose municipal wells we began to see pretty precipitous declines about a decade ago. And they, when they built a new treatment system for the city, overbuilt the capacity of that system, anticipating taking some of that winter water, Representative Schaffler, that you were talking about earlier, out of the Umatilla River in the winter, running it through their treatment plant to clean it up to drinking water standards, and then injecting it in those municipal wells. They began this project under an experimental license with us several years ago, about 3 years ago now. Today, 60% of the city of Pendleton's municipal supply comes from that winter Umatilla water. So we have found that this works. The key is finding out where the geology exists to make it work all around the state, and then helping people get the tools in place to put it in place.
With that, I'd like to draw your attention to a map that we've been working with that show the potential for aquifer storage and recovery and aquifer recharge sites across the state. And what I'd like to point out here, I think, the important piece to note is that there's great potential with a good geographic distribution. I'm looking particularly now at the green dots that have a pretty nice distribution across the state and show the potential for actual development of some of these below-ground water supply storage sites in the years to come. So this is the type of information that we're looking at and will help us, I think, identify and prioritize our work as we move forward. The fourth component of the initiative that we wanted to touch on today is the regional and community-based water supply planning grants that we have available. We've just opened this process in mid-January to communities, and the grants are available in increments up to $20,000 per project. We're asking communities for a 25% cost share, so $5,000 of that $20,000. And it's open to anyone, public or private, parties who are engaged in the development of long-term water supply in their community. We have four main criteria that we want to these to address, and we also would like a great geographic distribution, of course. But the four criteria that we've put together are that we'd like to see stakeholder diversity and citizen involvement as part of the application process and the longer-term discussion as well. So we'd like to hear from communities who are addressing their supply issues on more of a regional basis in partnership with other communities and outlying areas, not just very small locales. We'd also like to see efforts to address water quality and land use planning as part of the water supply conversation, because, as you know, those issues are closely tied together and need to be considered in tandem. And finally, we'd like to see local governments already represented at the table and already part of the conversation, already bought into the idea of the long-term supply development. So just the timeline that's here at the bottom of the screen, I wanted folks to be aware that the applications are due to us March 15th, and we hope to award the grants April 15th, with the close of the projects actually this fall, November. It's a very quick timeline, and what we're actually looking for are projects that are already queued up and ready to go and need an extra nudge. The modest amount of these grants and the timeline are really, in this round, not going to allow for projects that are still very much in the ethereal stage, but for folks that are ready to hit the ground running.
I think Sunrise may have been up on that map we were talking about earlier because of our aquifer problems out there by Damascus. I believe my water district, Sunrise Water Authority, has already done a lot of their studies. Can you tell me if they've applied or are going to apply for this? Do you have any idea?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not aware that an application has actually come in yet, although I do know that they have, their projects have made it onto several lists that will be advancing for community grants of this type in the next couple months.
Then I'll follow up, if I may, with a broader question. So if a water district, or in this case a water authority, has already done a bunch of studies or whatever, feasibility, whatever, leading up to these grants aren't just prospective for those starting. These are also for those that have already done a bunch of work, or in likelihood, those that have already done a bunch of work. How are you?
Madam Chair, Representative, the nice thing about these particular grants is that they are accessible for communities that are in any stage of their project. And so we do have folks who are interested in conducting feasibility studies or needing to hire a facilitator to bring folks together for the first time to even begin this conversation. And there are others who are much further down the road who are interested now in conducting outreach or public education or some of the later stages of their projects. So it's a nice mix of interest, but I don't know which applications have physically arrived on our desk.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, how many grants do you award?
Madam Chair, Representative, we have in this round a pot of $200,000 to work with. So grants up to $20,000 per project. That's
so eight awards.
Ten. Yeah. Very, very few. But as we noted before, the interest is great and will be more than we can award in this round. Our hope is to be able to take that interest with us into the next legislative session and show what a help that can be.
Madam Chair, thank you for your indulgence. I love this subject matter. So we have $200,000. Now, if there's an area that has the same, if it's possible in Oregon, the same geological characteristics as another one over here, do we have to reinvent the wheel every single time in every single municipality, in every single water district? Or can we take this information and use it over here and save ourselves some money? Or are we got to do every single one, every single time, go through the entire same process?
Madam Chair, Representative, certainly we don't want to reinvent wheels that have all been already been invented. The interesting thing about geology is that you do have to pay attention. It's site-specific.
Right.
And you do have to pay attention to the site-specific character of an area. But certainly, we believe very strongly that a lot of this information is going to be translatable around the state.
Okay, thank you.
And you mentioned my area, and everybody there is very excited about doing it. We've taken, I think it's 5 municipalities who struggle each year, especially in the summer, especially in Seaside, when the water's taken out of the South Fork, a very low river and sometimes non-existent stream flow at that area, and aging systems, aging pumps, etc. It's very exciting for us to have this, and it's happening more quickly than we thought, I think. And so I'm looking forward to watching. Hopefully they get one of the grants, too.
Thanks to your leadership, Madam Chair, and Senator Johnson, who have helped pull the community together to talk about this. We're pretty excited about it as well.
Senator Johnson, I am giving her the lion's share of the credit on this. She has made these meetings happen and literally has a room full of people. And we even got a new district involved who hadn't been invited to the first meetings, and they're involved, a very, very small district at this point, but they had a serious breach of whatever, it was a leak, and by virtue of the fact that they had a little extra support around them, they're at the table now, too.
Good. So, Madam Chair, may I just ask this question? So, can you do this by a county, or how do you do this? Like, I mean, one city in my district has their own water program, but little cities like Lafayette and Dayton do not.
Madam Chair, Representative, we anticipate getting grant applications from counties.
Okay.
We may get grant applications from individual cities. We're going to score grants that show cooperation between multiple jurisdictions.
Okay.
More highly than okay. Perhaps just one entity grants.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Before we close this morning, we wanted to share with you some of the work that we're doing with an external technical peer review group that we formed. We talked a little bit about the first two components being done under the auspices of a outside private contractor. And so we've brought this group in to help us sort of ground truth some of the methodology and just make sure that we're on the right track with those first two components in particular. And wanted to let you know who is on this technical peer review group. Three individuals. One, Lorna Stickle from the Portland Water Bureau. She's here representing the Regional Water Providers Consortium. Bill McFarlane with the U.S. Geological Survey, and Dr. Michael Campana from OSU. And we'll be meeting with these folks at a couple stages throughout our work throughout this next year. And as I say, it's to make sure that we have someone who's looking at our methodology as well as our process and our outreach process to make sure that we've asked the right questions and covered all of our bases and that this project is developing the way that it best can. They've been very supportive. We met with them just last week and ran all of our methodology by them for data collection. They liked what we were doing, and the biggest suggestion that they had for us was to make sure that we ground truth methodology, that when we are ready to roll something out, we try it in one little area first and make sure that it resonates with some of the work that may have already been done there at the county or regional level, and make sure that kind of rings true before we roll it out largely to the rest of the state, which is the way you should roll out a good data collection process. So we've appreciated their time and their input with us. And lastly, we have a timeline that we wanted to share with you. Let me skip those first couple bullets just briefly and drop down to the seasons there. This kind of tracks how we're doing all of the data collection components in our initiative. This spring, we're in data collection mode and processing. By summer, we hope to have everything that's out there in the door for our staff to be able to start processing and reviewing. We'll review throughout the fall and then hope to have initial results up on the web for the public to play with and ask these what-if questions and do their own evaluation of by the end of the year. So that's how the whole initiative will roll out, and we hope to have some results, the data collection results, to share with the legislature by next session. Moving back up to the top of the page, our March timeline, which is coming up very quickly, we'll be holding 4 stakeholder workshops throughout the state, and this will be specifically with regard to those first 2 components that are led by HDR. What we're going to do is let folks know what's happening with the initiative, kind of like today's overview, what's happening in general, and then really begin the data collection process with water users. What we would like to do is have these stakeholder workshops so that people can hear what's happening and what's sort of expected, and then when they start getting the phone calls from the contractor, that it's not a completely cold call, that they know who we are and they know what we're trying to achieve with this initiative. So the 4 locations and times that we've chosen are March 4th in Salem, March 7th in Medford, the 18th in Ben at the Redmond Library, and March 19th, City of Pendleton, City Hall. And of this information with more detail on the venues and times will also be up on our website here shortly.
Any questions?
I just have to make a comment more than anything, Madam Chair. When I came into the legislature in 03, I had the benefit of being on the Water Committee, and Mr. Cleary and Mr. Sussman then were very patient with me, as everyone still is very patient with me, I'm grateful to say. But it's been a fascinating experience. And in 05, I was on the Ways and Means Sub on Natural Resources, so they're just constantly looking at these issues. And we've had some controversial, if you will, or debatable issues before this committee, but I can promise you, if you want to pack this building with people, you start talking about their water, and this issue is going to be with us forever. And I just wanted to say Mr. Ward and his staff have done a very professional job, and I appreciate them and how they deal with this in a professional fashion when it is so incredibly sensitive and emotional. You're doing a good job, and I just want to say I appreciate all you're doing, and I appreciate coming here today and filling us in on what's going on. So thank you.
Rep. Nelson?
Yes, thank you. I'm just recalling the Ag Committee from 2001. I believe you were a great part of that, right, Mr. Ward?
I appeared several times, Madam Chair. Yeah.
Okay, then why don't you care about those farmers in Eastern Oregon, I want to know.
Madam Chair, Representative, great question. And the short answer is I do. And one of the most difficult things for a person in a job like mine is to have to tell a farmer that we're not going to let him take the water he needs that season to bring a full crop in. So you lead me, Madam Chair, Representative, to just one kind of closing comment, if I might. Senate Bill 1069, which is currently in consideration here in this session of the legislature, has moved unanimously out of the Senate Substantive Committee to Ways and Means, would set aside 3 pockets of money to address some of those needs.
Yay.
The first piece is $750,000 to do a detailed assessment of how to get water out of the Columbia River in the winter when we're not worried about the fish.
Right.
And put it down in the aquifer to recharge those aquifers. So this piece includes a wet water component, this study. It's not just a paper study. It's a wet water component where in phase 3 we're applying water to those aquifers. So Senate Bill 1069, the Umatilla assessment and recovery piece. Secondly, it establishes, if enacted, would establish a mitigation bank in the Umatilla Basin, which, similar to what we have in place in the Deschutes Basin today, would provide a trading zone for farmers and others in the basin who have water they're not going to use in a certain season to market that to folks who need it.
All right.
And we've seen this work in the Deschutes. We believe it can work in the Umatilla. The third piece, and an extremely important piece, is the statewide component of Senate Bill 1069. And that would establish a statewide fund for folks who want to do the detailed environmental and engineering feasibility work to bring a new water supply project in place. And Representative, you talked about kind of getting the planning done and then where do you go from there? And that's where a lot of folks get stuck, because it costs a lot of money today when you're looking at storing water, to do the environmental and engineering work, to bring that to the construction phase. And so this component of the bill, and the number of folks in the room were key players in building that and bringing it forward. This component of the bill would provide a statewide fund for working with local jurisdictions to do that work. So we're hopeful that you all will act on Senate Bill 1069 this session, and we'll be able to address some of those issues, Representative, that you raised.
So, follow up. So, would you mind continue with the amount of money you're asking? $750,000 for the first phase, and the second one is how much?
Thank you, Representative. Madam Chair, the $750,000 for the first phase, the mitigation bank, the second piece is $500,000. The statewide component in the bill is at $10 million. Now, we understand that all those numbers are negotiable, and that's currently a part of the process today, but that's what the bill articulates.
Okay. And just one last question. Since in my former life, this, you'd be amazed, but of course we were in the business of putting out fires and using enormous helicopters and even put a bladder in a 747 to make that happen, but even though the Forest Service wouldn't approve the use, we should have done so in California. But we used to tell the various states in dealing with their agencies that we could supply the water for Nevada and Arizona and out of Oregon because we have so much. And then so when we're so restricted, I'm probably so far off base that I don't even know what I'm saying, but it seems like, I mean, we have more water than we'll ever use as long as we're here on this earth, and I'm concerned why it is such a problem to get just enough, number one, to end hunger in this state, provide a livelihood for, you know, good men and women who, like my husband, he was an agronomist, pomologist, but who know how to treat God's earth properly. And why is it the environmental issue that restricts us? Is that the number one factor from using this godsend of water we have?
Madam Chair, Representative, I would agree. We have a lot of water, especially this time of year in this wonderful state. But the issue, Representative, is timing. So we get our water during a time of the year when we have so much of it that we are unable to put it to beneficial use. And so the challenge for us, when we have a very wet winter and generally a very dry summer in this state when our needs are highest, is to find ways, as Representative Schaffler was mentioning earlier, to store that water for use in the dry season. And we've got to find ways that are environmentally acceptable, that are cost-effective, and that provide real benefit to communities. That's the effort, Representative, that we're attempting to embark upon with this work that we've discussed today. So we have a tremendous water resource in Oregon,
yeah,
but it's a matter of when it comes, mm-hmm, and when it's available to use. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to address today.
Okay. And I'd like to see you, along with this initiative, and maybe at that point where it comes into, and starting in the fall, for example, and sort of, I mean, and this may sound a little goofy, but, you know, I think it has some merit. Maybe do something like a poster contest, incentives or something, and engage the education school kids, have them get creative in ways they can conserve, et cetera, and right down to, most people have dishwashers, so you wouldn't want to put that on it. But if you're washing your hand wash, you need to have soapy water, throw it on your roses. It'll also kill the bugs, you know, that kind of thing. Using, what is that called, the drip method for irrigation for home gardens, et cetera. A little bit much to try to expect it to happen on a large scale. And then I guess finally I want to thank you, Director Ward. You are a farmer, so you get it. And the fact that he is, that he understands that. And that's such a huge plus for the department. And I don't know what your background is, Brenda, but you'll learn a lot from this guy. And But, and I appreciate that, that we have people in your mm-hmm. position who have, you know, inherent knowledge of the issues. And it is the farming community and growers who are going to benefit from that and the application that you put in when you make your policy. So appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I hope
all
you stay
people.
There. Yes, exactly. And really, really appreciate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Rep Cowan, do you have anything to add?
I think you guys have covered it just fine. Thank you.
I won't make an issue of this, but because I don't know too much about it, but all of a sudden I'm going to become a protege of Representative Schaffner over
careful
here.
Careful, Representative. You get a lot of trouble doing that kind of thing.
No, I have been shocked that this is happening in the state, and I come from the panhandle of Texas, and you know, I think, gosh, I go from drought to surplus, and we still don't have enough, and it just seems like such a selfish thing, you know, when we have so much that we can't share. But in my community, I have an incredible farm family, the Gundermans, and I would invite you to come over. We've invited the governor, I think I've done this for 8 years, and invite them to come over and see what you can do on a farm, and what they've done with their conservation program. It's just incredible. But every time we go to the legislation to get a little bit of support for those type of projects, it's very hard. And I'm just wondering if we're really doing our job, us, not y'all, of telling the story correctly of why. Do you think we are? Why?
I'm with you, sister.
Okay, all
let's
right.
Keep going.
Well, I just maybe we just need to do better in explaining, you know, what the roadblocks are and what we need to do about it, and it needs to be now. I mean, it's the one thing you can't live without, besides air. And it just seems like it needs to move up to the top priority, right?
And Madam Chair, Representative, we agree, and the Gundermans are a great story.
Thank
We've
you.
We've worked with them on their hydroelectric facility
so
and license there. So they are very unique and creative folks who've done some great things there.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea to focus on. There, I can think of a dairy, and it's not, it might be in my district, but it's in the upper left coastie area that SEPA's work at. And really innovative equipment and how they
yes.
do it. A lot of dairy farms are moving that way. But there's the Yamsey Ranch down in Klamath area, things that people have done on their own, maybe in conjunction
exactly.
with their soil and water district or watershed councils. And maybe we need to focus on showcasing this a little bit.
Yes. So, excellent. Yeah. I'm with you.
Anybody have any other questions or comments?
I could go on for hours.
I know. Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Doing I wanted to say before we leave, one of the reasons that people might say, well, what does this have to do with emergency preparedness and ocean policy? But I think that what, you know, we have heard from the department and our Coastal Caucus several times last year and the year before, and taking the broader vision, water on the uplands affects water in the lowlands and out in the ocean and fisheries, et cetera. So it's incumbent on us to keep this broad vision and big look approach. And I was going to ask you one more thing about your initiative when you say out into the future. How far are you going to project the future needs assessment?
Madam Chair, we're looking at the future needs assessment for 2025 and 2050.
Okay,
so
great.
Both those time frames.
Okay, great. All right. Thanks again, and welcome
thank
to
you
the
very much.
State and all that, or the department. I don't know, it might be from the state. There's no further business before the committee. We stand adjourned.